Welcome to Greek Club. We're back at work here in the winter term. So welcome to all of us physically and digitally present. We are reading through Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount, and we are in chapter 5. And I seem to recall, I'm sorry for not writing it down, but I believe we did the jot and the tittle of verse 18. Is that where we stopped? Does anybody want to gainsay that? Or does that sound like
we did that.
Okay, so we'll pick up at verse 19 then. Okay, so Matthew chapter 5, verse 19. We begin with a conditional relative clause. Hus e'an un duse mian ton en telon tuton ton elachiston kai didaxe hutos tus anthropus. Elachistas, klephesitai ente basilea ton urano. You kind of know you're in Matthew if you don't read more than about five or six lines before you see the phrase, the kingdom of the heavens, right? The reign of heaven.
Is that where you got that idea?
It is, indeed. I got it from the Bible. That's right. Strictly speaking, you probably shouldn't have e'on here. You should just have on. But in the New Testament, you'll get e'on in the place of on. Hus on would be the correct construction, but it just sort of slips in. Aon, strictly, as you might remember, is a plus on, and it combines. So whoever, right? Therefore, verse 19, and I actually think that therefore is important in terms of the theology of the text, which we won't get into. But therefore, whoever looses the aorist subjunctive of luo, and you get subjunctive just because it's a conditional relative clause. Whoever looses one of the commandments, now we'll put the demonstrative pronoun, and they always stand in predicate position, one of these commandments, now we'll further modify commandments, ton elachiston. This is, believe it or not, the superlative of mikros. Littler, least. Right? So, and you can't blame Greek because English does the same thing, right? Has irregular forms. So whoever looses one of these least commandments, kai didaxe, now another subjunctive verb in the same clause, and teaches like this, men, or human beings. Now comes the comma, and then you get the apodosis, or the then clause of the sentence. Least he will be called in the reign of heaven, or the reign of the heavens. And then we get the counter to that, which I'll just read then. Hus da'an poiese kai didaxe, hutas megas klephesitai en te basileia ton uranon. But whoever, hus on, notice that you have on there, not e'on. Whoever does, the aorist subjunctive of poio, and teaches, aorist subjunctive of didasco again, this one, big will be called, or great will be called, in the reign of the heavens. So, just two conditional sentences. And pretty straightforward, I think. Any questions or comments? Observations about verse 19.
Whoever does what and teaches what?
Good question. Joe's asking, we need an object for does and teaches, right? Probably the commandments. Right? You just kind of pick it up from the prior sentence and then supply it again. Matthew likes to do this, by the way. I know there's a number of examples where you'll have parallel expressions. The first one will be the full expression, and the second will just be a condensed version of it. Okay, and so it's he does this, for instance, in the parable. Excuse me, it's not a parable. In the judgment scene of the sheep and the goats, where you get the Lord's conversation with the sheep in full form, and then his conversation with the goats, and it's the same conversation, but it's abbreviated. Right. So I think you're supposed to supply the direct object from the prior sentence. So, yeah, Tim?
Is there any significance that he doesn't use a superlative for megas, or would you just construe that as superlative in sense? Or
I thought about that, Tim. You know, what you're asking is, why doesn't it say this one would be called greatest to match up with least? I'd like to think that there is, but given the slipperiness, you know, superlatives aren't even always used, as you know, in the New Testament. So I'm not sure there's enough evidence to conclude, you know, that, for instance, he's withholding greatest because there's only one who's greatest, right? Yeah, I mean, theologically, I like that. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question. So good. Anything else on verse 19? Okay, we'll pick up at verse 20 then. And now Jesus explains with a gar sentence why verse 19 is the case. Lego gar humin hati ean me periseuse humon he dikaiosine pleon ton grammataon kai pharisaion ume eis eltheta eistein basileon ton uranon. For I say to you that if not, or as commonly, unless, ean me, unless your righteousness, notice that humon here, you might expect it to follow righteousness. It can, the genitive pronoun can precede, and it just does here, no difference in meaning, I don't think. Unless your righteousness abounds. Now, pleon is the comparative of polus, okay, much, many, here, more. And it's neuter singular accusative. And it doesn't modify anything in the sentence. Okay? It's in fact acting like an adverb. It doesn't modify. I say it doesn't refer to anything in the sentence as an adjective. It's acting like an adverb. So strictly speaking, unless your righteousness abounds more greatly than the scribes and Pharisees, then ume plus the aorist subjunctive, which, as you remember, is emphatic negation. No way, Jose, right? You will certainly not enter into the reign of heaven. Let's see. I think that's of some significance, the play on there, because it's modifying the verb abound. Part of the argument is Jesus talking about a quantitative greatness or a qualitative greatness? You actually see this in the commentaries. And I think this would be a piece of evidence, perhaps, in favor of a qualitative greatness. That is to say, one that's linked to Christ. Because in Matthew, especially as you'll see when you read the whole gospel, the scribes and Pharisees are essentially defined by one characteristic. They hate Jesus. Yeah, that's the way it's portrayed. So, and by the way, I think we've seen this before, I think. This phrase, if we haven't, it's good to mark out, to enter into the Basileia in Matthew always refers to the last day. Matthew always has in view the last day, which is, as you can understand, makes me happy.
So, Jeff, by qualitative, you mean of a different kind?
Yes. Yes.
Not just more.
Not just more good deeds or something like that. Yeah. Right. And there's a big debate exegetically about what the righteousness is and so forth. I tend to think, oddly enough, with Lenski, that it's the good works that faith produces. Yeah. Sorry about that. So. Yeah, right.
So it's also not something like, you know, before you had these kind of ceremonial laws or something, mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the spiritual laws, and mm-hmm. because they don't understand the spiritual laws, I've heard that too. Right?
Yeah. Right, and we're about to get into the so-called, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you. Right, yeah. Actually, Ryan, that brings up another question. Let's see. It would take too long to get into, but I actually think a good case can be made for taking verse 20 as logically subordinate to verse 19. And it is, because it begins with gar, right? So in other words, the real punch of this paragraph, which is a very difficult paragraph theologically, is verse 19. That is, therefore, you want to be great in the reign? Then do and teach the commandments. You want to be least? Then don't do and teach the commandments. Okay. Now, what are the commandments? What is God? What is God's will for His people? And that's what we get in 21 to 48. See? Now notice that greatest in the reign is in, and least in the reign is still in. See? So this isn't talking, I think you could make, you have to do it carefully, and a recently published volume does this. For better or worse. I think this is talking about good works that Christians produce. Yeah. And so Christ cares. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep. But they're greater not because there's more of them, but because they're produced out of a relationship with Christ. Yeah, right. Yep. They're the fruit of faith, as we often say in Pauline terms, but I think that's exactly right. So and all Christians are accompanied by good works, right? The formula now would teach us not to say that they're necessary, because that's such a confusing thing to say. You have to hedge it around, you know, with 16 different qualifications and so forth, which you can do. But I think the formula says that's not the pattern of sound words. So, but now we're sounding like dogmaticians, and Lord knows we don't want to do that. So any other grammatical questions or comments? Okay, let's do verse 21. So now we get into items here. You've heard the two series of three. So verse 21. Ekusatahati erethe tois archaiois u phonuses hastan phonuse enakas estai te kruse. Jesus says, you heard that erethe is the aorist indicative passive of lego. Doesn't that make your day? Right? Heard that it was said not by, because only under certain circumstances can the simple dative express personal agency, but to the old people, ou phonuses, you will not phonuo, you shall not murder or kill. Here, the future indicative, phonuses. Isn't that great when you see a form, you think, man, that can't be that easy. O-A-S-A? And you go, yes, it is. You will not murder. And, now we have another conditional relative clause, has on phonuse. Notice here, because it's in a clause headed by on, phonuse a would have to be the aorist subjunctive active. Third singular. Whoever murders... estai, that's from amen, will be enachas, guilty, liable to, and you're liable to things in the dative case, by the way, to the judgment. Okay? So thus far, verse 21. You've heard that it was said to the old guys, to the ancient ones, you will not murder with an imperatival force, and whoever murders will be liable to the judgment. Good. Comments? Yeah, Will, go ahead.
I was just wondering if this "you will not murder" is like a common Greek, or is that just used in the New Testament to express like the command in the Old Testament? Is like that a common way in the Koine Greek to say?
Second person future indicative can readily be imperatival. Yep, yep. And I suppose, what do we have here? All plus an imperfect, right?
Well, I'm or low, remember.
Oh, that's right, low. That's right, I said all. Yeah, yeah. But it's just an imperfect morphologically, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Right. So you guys didn't think I knew anything about Hebrew. I gave him $5 this morning. So it used to be $2, but now his prices have raised. So yeah. It costs a lot to make Gibbs look good. So you can have an imperatival future like that. So.
One more question?
Yeah, absolutely.
How about te chrisse? What use of the dative is that, would you say?
It's the dative after enakos.
Yeah.
No, really. That's, yeah, the word just follows with the dative, right? Right. It's like homoios, like to something. Yeah, that's what I would call it.
My question about that is, when he says to the judgment, is he referring specifically to kind of eternal judgment, end times judgment, or just, is this kind of more general sense, some kind of judgment? Or is he being more specific here?
Yeah.
I'm talking the big judgment. Is that the force of that article?
I don't think so, because you get this ascending thing when Jesus gives the true interpretation of Torah, where you get judgment, Sanhedrin, Gehenna of fire.
Okay.
And so I think here it's probably just you're liable to human judgment, I think. Yeah, right,
okay.
Right. Good question.
Oh, okay. Just
yep, right. Yeah, which actually brings up, we could go ahead and get verse 22, right? Okay. Emphatic. I mean, unnecessary pronouns are often emphatic, but here, as I like to say, Jesus doesn't have footnotes. I mean, he just claims to know stuff. Right? So, ego de lego humin hati pasha argetzamenas to adolfoa tu enakas estai te chrise hastaan epe to adolfoa tu raka enakas estai to synedrio hastaan epe mora enakas estai estain geanon tu spiras. But I say to you, emphatic, authoritative, this is why the people marvel at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, that he teaches as one who claims authority and not as their scribes. Right? You shouldn't do this, by the way. You should always quote a Bible verse, right? Or the formula, or the something authoritative. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But I say to you, plural, that everyone who is angry. Now, orgizomenos, orgizo means to anger somebody. It's a transitive verb. But it's another good example. This happens all the time in the New Testament, and in this time period, apparently, where you get a passive form, but it ends up having an active voice in transitive meaning. So the passive of orgizo, it won't always mean this, but it can easily shift from be angered to simply be angry. See? And that's what's going on here. So everyone who goes on being angry, maybe the present simple participle has some force there. Everyone who goes on being angry in relation to his brother or with his brother will be guilty of the judgment. So that's as bad as murder. And whoever says, there's the subjunctive verb again, epe, the aorist subjunctive of lego, whoever says to his brother, raka, which apparently is a term of derision, I think there's some discussion about that, will be liable or guilty in relation to the Sanhedrin. What is this, a local community council or something? And whoever says mora, there we just have the vocative of moros, which means foolish, and here it's used as a noun, fool, will be liable into or unto the Gehenna of fire, the fiery Gehenna. And I think this is right. I've never actually been to Israel, but on what side of Mount Zion is the Valley of Hinnom? Is it on the south?
I
think it's on the south side. This was the garbage dump, the burning place, and it comes to be a metaphor for eternal damnation. So the fiery Gehenna. So, Tim, this is kind of in relationship to your question about Te Chrise. I think here Jesus just ratchets it up. You know, human judgment is bad enough. Community judgment is worse. Eternal judgment is the worst. It's the worst of all. So this is what Yahweh intended by you shall not murder. This is Jesus is again giving the authoritative interpretation of the fifth commandment. Good questions.
Is that that last phrase the with the genitive of fire? Is that like the Hebrew kind of way, like
yep.
Mount of holiness?
Exactly.
Kind of
I think exactly right. Yep. Yeah. Fiery. Yeah. Gehenna of fire. Fiery Gehenna. Yep. Right. Yeah, it's actually called a Hebraic genitive. Then that makes, you know, makes everybody happy, having something to call. So,
yeah, good. Okay, let's get at least one more verse in. Boy, that's a long sentence. We'll see how far we can get. Aeon un pros feres ta daron su epi ta thysias darion ka ke mnes theis hatiha adolfosu eche te katasu. I guess we've got to keep going. Aphes eche ta doron su emprosthen tu thysias de riu ka hippage proton di alagethe to adolfosu kai tata elthon prosfera ta doronsu. Therefore, since this is true, if you are prosferoing, there's the subjunctive of prospero, if you are bringing your gift unto the altar, talking about the temple now in Jerusalem, kake is kai and eke together, and there, this is from mimneskamai, it's deponent. So it's the aorist subjunctive passive. See the theta, eta? But it has an active meaning. Second singular. There you remember that your brother has te, something, kata plus a genitive, against you. Notice that it's you not have something against him. He has something against you. Right? Aphes, verse 24. We'll go quickly and finish this sentence. Aphes is from afemi. It's the aorist imperative active, second singular. Those are the forms you always have to look up. Leave. Let go. Leave there the gift of you before the altar and get going. Hippagia, present imperative active, second singular. First, in the first place, this is from dialasso. It's very irregular. It's the aorist imperative, passive, second singular. The, it's a very odd ending. To reconcile, so you be reconciled. Aorist imperative passive. Be reconciled to the brother of you, and then, literally, coming, prospera, keep bringing your gift. Okay? The participle coming, by the way, is probably an attendant circumstance participle, as Wallace calls it. So just then, come and bring your gift. Something like that. That was a long sentence, but we kind of had to get the last gasp there. Anything just at the end there, 23 and 24? Ben, you look like you got some. You're just looking intelligent. Good, that's what I thought. Okay? All right, very good. Lectionary lunch tomorrow, 11:35. Heath Club on Thursday at noon. Be there.